James Torvaney and Sheriff Hassan from CAF. Welcome to the Sports Pro Podcast. Welcome to Sports Pro Live in London. Let's just set this up. We connected on LinkedIn and we've been working on a collaboration, let's say, a content collaboration. We're going to be putting out a series of features, including this podcast and other pieces of content around the African sports business, which for us as Sports Pro has been a bit of a blind spot for us for many years. I've been with Sports Pro since 2011, believe it or not, and we've never really given it a huge amount of airtime. And I think the international sports business community, probably in the media space, certainly a lot of outlets would say the same. And so we really want to focus on it more over the coming months. We're doing a panel session here at Sports Pro Live with NFL Africa, with Confederation of African Football and the IOC, which, James, you're going to be moderating. We're doing this here podcast, and we're also doing some pieces to come. So what can our audience, the Sports Pro audience, expect from you, James, specifically as part of this content series and from us kind of over the coming weeks?
Thanks, Mike. First of all, I think we're both, Sharif and I, feeling the cold a bit coming back from Lagos and Cairo. But in terms of what we're doing, you mentioned before when you spoke about this being a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. So obviously you mentioned earlier in the year, I think Africa was your top pick for 2024 sports trends. And you're right in that there hasn't been much coverage in most of the sports business media. I think what we're seeing now is we're starting to see bigger brands turn to Africa. Obviously, the NFL are going to be on the panel today. NBA has been investing significantly in Africa and in the Basketball Africa League over the last few years. PFL Africa have announced their Africa division. So we're starting to see a number of brands tentatively come into the continent. And I think over the next few years, this is going to be a growing topic, both in terms of African talent and in terms of building audiences in Africa. So I think this is a really good point here where we're at the beginning of this wave. And what we want to do over this series is really give some background as to what's going on, who are the major players you need to know, what are some of the interesting initiatives happening, etc.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about that series that you'll be working on, because obviously you're someone that has lived and worked in the sports industry in Africa for some time. You're going to be leaning on insights and commentary from various people from across the African sports landscape. So tell us a little bit about what you've got planned and what you're going to be focusing on specifically.
This series, we're looking at doing a six-part editorial series on the website, which will encompass everything from the commercial landscape, rights holders, sponsorships, etc., through to broadcast landscape, what's happening there with broadcast, OTT. We'll include pieces on betting, talent development, and infrastructure as well. So it's really covering the whole gamut, like everything really that's going on. For me personally, I've been, you know, mostly coming at this from a media angle where we work with most of these major rights holders, you know, the NBA, the NFL, La Liga, etc. We do a lot of work with them on their digital campaigns within Africa, and it's put me in a position to speak to a lot of these stakeholders.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what's in store. Obviously, it's, as you say, a marriage of your kind of networking connections with Sports Pro's platform. And yeah, hope we can provide some value and some insight to our audience around, you know, how to navigate the African continent, really, from a sports business perspective. And you mentioned, obviously, a lot of activity, investment activity, a lot of rights holders making moves. Delighted to have Sheriff Hassan here, who is, of course, the head of marketing at CAF, Confederation of African Football. We're in an AFCON year as well. It's a hugely successful tournament earlier in January. So, Sheriff, welcome. Great to have you, obviously, with us as the kind of first individual and organization to feature as part of this series. Let's just reflect a little bit on AFCON, because that is your flagship international national team tournament. How was it for you? Can you paint a kind of picture of, you know, for our listeners, how successful this particular tournament was?
Gladly, this Africa Cup of Nations for this edition, it was very successful when it comes to numbers, viewership, and digital numbers. We broke all the records. Actually, we put a slogan before the competition that we will provide, and this is something like we built from like almost 2 years, that we will provide the best Africa Cup of Nations ever. And we put a slogan like called the pride of African football. And because when we do the researches and when we find like what is the strength point of the African football when it comes to the fans, African fans, maybe James can agree with that. They love to feel the pride of what they are doing, and they feel the attachment of what they are doing. And this is maybe like a point we will discuss later, how we engage those fans like through many activations and many tools like digital and on-ground and even for the competition itself, to let them feel this feeling like they are proud of what we are providing for them as a competition, not only as a sports competition, but actually a whole event. So we build this strategy based on like what the Africans want to show. And luckily and successfully we did, like it turns to be not only for Africans, but actually everyone globally feels the same like feeling and put in the mindset like, oh, those guys, like they are feeling proud of what they are doing. So they're doing it perfectly. This reflects on the numbers, as I'm telling you, like the viewership numbers, the digital numbers. Now we are by numbers, biggest continental competition on digital. I'm sure like Yovo will bring new numbers like in 4 months, but at least we stayed like 5 months on top. For me, like it was successfully because even the feedback from the people, from the players, from the sponsors, from the commercial parts, all the stakeholders, like they were happy, they were enjoying. Sometimes like you feel like the feedback even here, like when I'm walking through the people, everyone telling me like, congratulations for this successful event, congratulations for the AFCON. We are proud to be part of this, like we are doing the logo, we are doing the branding, we are the one doing the production. So even all the European companies or like the European agencies or everyone involved in the sports industry, they felt the success of the competition. From fans, from stakeholders, from companies, so you create like a successful event. This is from my point of view, it's what we can say, like it's a successful story.
Sure, sure.
James, I'm interested to hear your views on it, because what was your sense of this tournament and how it compared to previous editions? Obviously, my experience of it was from afar, but you were a lot closer to it geographically and just you are closer to it.
What I found interesting and what felt different this time, and Shiv, I'd love to get your thoughts on what made this or how intentional this was. I think this time it definitely felt more global. I was in London for part of the tournament and I saw not just diaspora, although it was, I think, diaspora led, but I saw a huge amount of interest abroad, not just in Africa. I think there's always been this, you know, very nationalistic sense where, you know, if Nigeria are playing, it's going to be big in Nigeria. If, you know, Ghana are playing, it'll be big in Ghana, etc. But I think what I saw this time that I don't remember seeing in previous editions was it became more of a global thing. I saw, you know, I had friends who maybe didn't have any connection to one of the countries watching it, which I'm not sure, Sharif, I don't know if that was different for you guys.
No, it's you are totally right. And this is something like I'd say, I have like two theories here. Like first thing is the authenticity of things. Like when you do something authentic, like people always recognize how you are authentic and you are proud of what you are doing, like from your side, and they are following you. And the other part is like, the interesting of the thing itself, like the football matches. Luckily, we have this like African players playing all over the world and they are very well known. And this is something like even differentiate like the Africa Cup of Nations and the other continental like competitions, like more than the Asian Cup or like the CONCACAF, because all the African players are playing somehow in Europe in clubs and they have fans. So they are having a fans, like not only African fans, but actually they are having European fans. You can find like all Liverpool supporting Salah, or like they are loving when Salah playing. Napoli, they are supporting Victor Osimhen because he's like the hero of the city. And this is like, for the first time, we can engage them. Like we push things to make the competition. It's not only for the Africans. Basically, we build it on the diaspora, as James said. But because of we have like second and third generation like Africans living abroad, now they are totally involved with the community. So people think like, no, it's not only a competition that playing in Africa, usually with a past editions, this is what they feel like. Even the European teams, they refuse to get the players or the players themselves. Sometimes they excuse, they don't want to play like the competition this time. But we plan to make it like, we are not fighting the clubs. We are not getting the players against them. This is like something the players themselves feel very happy to play, and actually they push this narrative. And when they push this narrative, the fans and the community, they keep engaged as like, it's okay, if they won, we will be happy and we will be like our team as, and even like for like semi-final, we have Nigeria, South Africa. I thought like it's the highest viewership in US because you have many Nigerians there and many South Africans and the community are huge and people start like they're getting sides. So they support either Nigeria or South Africa.
I think also, because I think, I don't know if this came from CAF or this was organic, it was kind of built as the Afrobeats Amapiano Derby.
Yes.
And I also felt like for us as well as, you know, a media company, it was really good for us that Nigeria and South Africa played. Like, that was a real blockbuster match.
Yeah, we create this activation around, let's talk about it when we come to culture, because we build our strategy based on the music, fashion and lifestyle. So we put this music when it comes to Nigeria, South Africa. We were very happy internally because this is actually the ultimate goal for us, because those are the famous music from Africa to all over the world. Now you can find, even 1 week before this match, it was the Grammys, and it was a huge fight online between Nigeria and South Africa as well, who wins the Grammys. So it's a, we use it and we mix it with a covering of the competition itself and make it like, no, it's not only like football, it's football, music and life and everything.
So that was very intentional, very strategic from a CAF perspective, from an organizer perspective. It wasn't kind of riding the, you know, the organic conversation, if you like.
No, actually it was planned since 1 year and a half before the competition to promote this music, fashion and lifestyle and culture.
You mentioned fashion and lifestyle, like what were you guys doing there?
For the first time, like, let's start with the fashion, like, for the fashion pillar, we identified, like, our research, we found, like, Africa is very famous of the fashion lines, and even, like, now the big brands, they're collaborating with African, like, artists to do, like, African lines and Afro lines. What we did is the first activation was that even before the competition, we sent the letters and circular thanks to the higher management to accept this crazy idea. So we sent to all the teams an official letter asking them to arrive to Cote d'Ivoire with a cultural outfit, the famous and the traditional outfits for the countries. The teams in the beginning, we presented to the teams during the draw, at the time of the draw, to the team managers and asking them, no, we don't want you to come with suits or with training suits. We want you to come with your traditional outfits. 5 days or 4 days before the competition, when the team starting arrive in Cote d'Ivoire, they put already the outfits, and then we spread it to all the media. We create like a PR buzz around arriving of the teams with the traditional outfits. Even we're using the team's social media platforms as well, and the players, they keep pushing their pictures. So on this day, we were trending almost all Africa and in Europe and in US, because everyone say, and we put a slogan, like, it's a, we create a competition called an AFCON drip check, and we ask the fans to vote who drip it, like, and who did the best drip for the AFCON, and we announce that the AFCON fashion show is about to start. So we get the attraction from the fashion line, not from the football side, because people were very happy to see, like, the famous player like Victor Osimhen coming with the traditional clothes, and the players from Ghana, they did a huge job, like, all the players are coming with outfits, and Mali, RD Congo, and everyone is doing something like very traditional. And when the fans see it, they start like thinking about the competition differently. Firstly, they thought it's random, the teams came with it randomly, but actually we keep planning it since like months before, and we communicating it either through official letters or through workshops with the team managers, with the media officers. Even sometimes we send them some samples of what we can see them wearing. Some of the teams, yes, they can do it, and some of the teams, like, in the beginning, they didn't accept the concept. Later on, even when they arrive to the team, to the matches and everything, we capitalize as well on the how the team, African teams arrive to the stadiums. How they think when they come out, you can see it all over the world. It went viral every time when the Nigerian teams arrive or when the Angolan team arrives. They have like their own music and their own dance every time. So we build on this pillar, many activations later on, building. And even the matches become way interested. The football were in a good quality, the matches in good quality. So people starting following. So they thought everything happening by coincidence, but actually it was planned. We were happy that Nigeria played against South Africa, like Cote d'Ivoire playing against RD Congo, because those guys as well are very famous in, when it comes to music in Francophone countries. So in France, you can see like this pattern between RD Congo and Cote d'Ivoire. So it was like, it represents the diversity of the continent. It represents the culture of the continent and in all pillars. So people, even they are not involved in football, even they are not following football, even they don't know how it's end up like 3-2, 2-1. They want to watch because this is something like belong to us.
Yeah, we've been speaking there about the kind of development of the tournament as this kind of global property. And you mentioned there, James, that it did feel globally relevant in a way that previous editions hadn't this time around. Would you say that from your perspective that AFCON and this particular property is the kind of biggest export that Africa has in its sporting kind of ecosystem that really does transcend? Is it driven by just the popularity of football globally? Is it that identity piece? Is it what makes this cut through in a way that perhaps other major events that are happening on African soil don't cut through?
It's a difficult one to answer. I think the obvious first answer is that football is just popular in a way across Africa that other sports aren't, at least not universally. So you have pockets where maybe athletics or rugby, etc., is popular. But, you know, Africa, every country follows a football team, and football is obviously big outside as well. I think one of the difficulties that African sports have, or a couple of the difficulties, relates to logistics and infrastructure as well. So the infrastructure in Côte d'Ivoire was really good. A lot of that was purpose-built, but I think if we compare it to previous tournaments, that was good and it made a very good spectacle. I think one thing which is difficult with all tournaments, and is maybe one of the reasons why you don't see more bigger events coming from Africa, is also the logistical side. I mean, even with the tournament in Côte d'Ivoire, I think that's still the biggest challenge that we have as a continent, is that you've got 54 countries and they're far, far more spread out. This is not like Euros where you can get a train to Germany from another country. They're very spread out. There is far fewer flight connections. It's very expensive to travel. So I think it's very difficult to have these big continental competitions when other sports, that might not have the same funding or the same interest, because the logistical challenges of doing them are just so much tougher.
Yes, 100%. I agree with James. To make the African competition globally appealing, you need to capitalize on what you have, because it's totally different when you think from outside. It's hard to organize a high standard competition in Africa because of the infrastructure, because of the logistics, because of the flights, because of the spaces between the countries, because even the restrictions for the visa entry and many things, that it's not so easy. But now we got many investment in when it comes to sports in Africa. But why they love AFCON, if you want to ask why people more attached to the AFCON or to the Africa Cup of Nations, because it's actually the main competition that belong and based in Africa. So you can find the basketball, it's very famous in Africa, but actually it's an NBA. It's an NBA product that it's imported to Africa, and they play it, and African players play in the NBA, and then when they come to the NBA in Africa, they play it and everything. But actually the fans, when it comes to fans perspective, what I feel from my 8 years working all over Africa, it's the Africans wants to feel the belonging of things. We own, we play it, and this is our own product. They feel the belonging more.
So let's talk about some of the commercial opportunities around a property like this. So obviously, leading into this tournament, CAF signed with IMG. There's a commercial relationship with IMG, the agency there, secured a number of sponsors for this tournament. There were broadcast deals, some came late in the day and things like that. There's clearly interest, there's commercial interest in a property like this. What kind of trajectory is AFCON on in that regard? Are you seeing now more interest from blue chip brands that have an international profile, as well as those who are heavily invested in already active within the African continent? What's the commercial outlook for this property?
Yes, actually, this competition, it seems it's now it reflects that this is a huge interest in the African football and African sports. We have this commercial partnership with IMG and many other, for the first time, we have BBC broadcasting all the matches, Sky Sports broadcasting all the matches in UK. I hear even the guys downstairs, they're telling me the viewership sometimes in UK, people watching AFCON games more than Premier League. When it comes to the normal match in the Premier League, people decided to watch in some boys and some areas, they watched the Africa Cup of Nations because they feel it's more connected. And this time, even with the sponsors, as I'm telling you, we approach the Africans living abroad, and they have a huge community in UK, in US, in Amsterdam, in Spain, in France, and everywhere you can find people have double nationalities, and they are second or third generation that lived and born and raised in Europe. They feel the attachment and they want to watch, and they have their own word when it comes to viewership, and they have their own community. So the brands itself feel it's okay. Okay, this is a competition that maybe we can target a community. They are living here with a product that it's not even still active in the market in Africa. It's a different market. So this reflects what we were speaking about, how to build an authentic competition making it like very, very, very authentic, you can make it globally from this authenticity. So from my side, this will even reflect in the next editions for the Africa Cup of Nations and for the AFCON. Like, people will start look at it differently. It's important and interesting from the football point of view because of the players, the high-value players, the high-profile players, and all the teams and the good competition when it comes to the infield and the matches itself, the good quality of football, and from commercial point of view because it's targeted to audience that's spread it all over the world. They are active all over the world. And actually, when you put as well the demographic of the African fans around, you can find the youngest continent. When it comes to people like from 18, maybe James, like, correct me if I'm wrong, you can reflect that when you look at TikTok, when you look at the platform, when you look at the digital, you can find like most of the African people are between 16 and 35. They are huge. They are active. They can do everything. They are represented. And as well, you can check from the music platforms. So this is something like I will let James speak about.
I often feel like the African market is in some ways a harbinger for the future. So in some ways, I think there's a lot that brands can learn from Africa or perhaps test in Africa because, you know, more developed market, we hear a lot about, you know, how to target Gen Z. And that's something that a lot of brands are asking, you know, how do we reach this new generation of fans that they're not watching live matches as more, they're consuming sports through, say, TikTok, you know, in moment form. And actually, we look at, you know, Africa, and a lot of this stuff is already happening there. You have the youngest populations in the world, you know, median ages, early 20s. You have fast growing as well. And I think in the next generation, African populations will be something like a third of the world's population. You don't really have pay TV there as in the same way that you have in the US or Western Europe. Sure, there is pay TV, but the market is very different. And I think it's fragmented. You don't have these huge kind of, you know, pay TV companies are in every
legacy term. Players.
Yeah, the legacy players like you might have Sky or ESPN. Mm. So I think in many ways, there's a lot of things going on in Africa, which I think are very interesting. You know, they kind of leapfrog the whole like pay TV thing and everyone's just gone straight to mobile and straight to social media. So I think there's a lot that other brands can learn and maybe look at whether it's AFCON or whether it's other things going on in Africa and say, well, either we can learn from this or we can use it as a test.
It's interesting. Presumably that's borne out in the numbers you see in terms of consumption and engagement across the various platforms that you put content out on, you know, that mobile consumption and, you know, the demographic profile of those who are engaging with your content. Are you able to share any kind of numbers or insights around what you see, not just for AFCON, but anything that CAF does that really speaks to the kind of uniqueness of that, you know, African fan base?
No, I don't have a specific numbers right now, but actually, like, it seems like during the AFCON, we have a huge viewership when it comes to countries outside Africa, like specifically in France and in UK and US for this competition. Basically, we measure it because of the teams that qualified and then how you can monitor it. Like when it comes, like in 2019, I remember it was like a successful competition as well, and it's played in Egypt and somewhere. So the final was like a huge in France because it was between Senegal and Algeria. And I remember the numbers at that time, it was very huge, almost similar to France 2018 when they won the World Cup, because it's a huge popularity there. And people like Senegal and Algeria, they're huge in France. This time it was different because it was in UK, because of the Nigerians and because of South Africans. So it depends. But actually, when it comes to numbers, that it's close to European clubs and European championship and European, even the Euro itself. And when you see like this, like exceeding the number, you can see how your product is like developed and it's mature now. It's really appealing for everyone living anywhere. And this is like a very challenging point because usually people look at the Africa Cup of Nations or the African competition as it's a competition played in Africa for Africans, which is not true because even those players, they are not based or born or raised in Africa. They are coming from afoot to play this competition. So it's appealing like as an international event, but it's playing in Africa. So this is how we look at it when it comes to how to promote it and when it comes to how to commercialize it.
let's look beyond AFCON, beyond the national team game, which is obviously what we've been talking about a lot here, and just the general development of African football. Obviously, there's a focus now on the club game and really developing that, new competitions. You've got the African Football League, or is it the Super League? I don't know where we're at with this. Could you just both perhaps speak to this? You know, where are we at in the club game in terms of just building that up now as well?
Okay, let's start with this infrastructure part, which is James mentioned before. Like, we are using the Africa competitions because it's the biggest competition to develop the world football ecosystem in Africa, because we are struggling from the infrastructure in Africa when it comes to stadiums, when it comes to transportation and everything. Now, luckily, as James said, like, we planned a lot for this AFCON, so we have like 6 good stadiums in Cote d'Ivoire. Nobody knows that before this competition, Cote d'Ivoire has only one stadium. So they built 5 new stadiums. And this is like what we said, the legacy of the AFCON. So we leave the competition with 5 stadiums, new, brand new stadiums for Cote d'Ivoire, which is we built to develop the club competitions. So now CAF has the regulations to like the standards of the stadiums, the homologated stadiums to play in the Champions League or the Confederation Cup or the AFL, with all the world-class standards, with the VAR equipment, with the camera equipment, with everything. So we are using the Africa Cup of Nations to build a legacy for the each country. And we promote this mindset or this approach to all the member associations to build the new stadiums to be like a line of the CAF and the development of CAF with instruction for sure and the direction for the CAF president and how to develop the African football. When it comes to competition, I'm speaking about the infrastructure, but from competition side and commercial side, we are promoting these competitions to make, because if you ask me, like, personally, I'm in love with the Africa club competitions. It's have like a huge fan base. You will never know how people are involved with this competition inside Africa. Maybe people outside Africa, they didn't know how fans, the club in Africa are huge and very attached to their team. They can show like full stadiums, all the matches. But actually the product itself needs to be developed from infrastructure point of view. And this is what we are working on. It's not like a quick take. You can do it in 1 year, but actually it's a long-term plan. You need to build infrastructure when it comes to stadiums and stadiums license and everything. Professional club license when it comes to administration point of view. Good football teams. Then you have the full ecosystem.
I think one of the difficulties, and this is not just in football, again, comes down to this logistics. So what I think is clear, and a lot of people don't realize, is that as much as everybody follows the European club football in Africa, there are some really well-supported clubs. So if you look at like Mazembe in DRC, if you look at Yanga or Simba in Tanzania, Al Ahly, Zamalek in Egypt, etc., most countries have 1 or 2 really big, well-supported clubs, but it's really difficult to make a league out of that because, you know, you have this situation where the big derby match, you know, might get 60,000 people, you know, and in, you know, Dar es Salaam, they regularly get those kind of crowds for the big matches. But then the other matches in the league just, you know, and it might be like a few hundred people. So there's some really core support there, but actually making a commercial product out of that is really difficult because either you have the local leagues where there's maybe 2 really big teams, or if you try and do things on a continental level, you run into the logistical challenges. And I think if you look at, say, what NBA are doing with Basketball Africa League, they're coming up against similar things. And I think their solution is, okay, well, we're just going to have these short 1-week conferences. But then it's really difficult for the teams to build a brand around that because it's not a season-long competition. You know, so you think, like, how can I invest if it's just going to be the short competition? So I don't really know what the answer to that is. I know there is something there and there are some really well-supported clubs, which I don't think people realize necessarily. But the question of how to make that a commercial business is, it's a tough one.
Yes, as well, like, it's another challenge is that Africa has a lot of diversity when it comes to zones. What is very like appealing in East Africa, maybe it's not appealing at all in West Africa, or what is like successful in North Africa, it may be like it's not working in South Africa. And when it comes to club competition, you need to integrate all of them.
I think it's also just on the infrastructure point, it's just worth noting. So the next AFCON, obviously in Morocco, which I think is very accessible to Europe. So I think there's some really interesting outcomes for Morocco because they've got quite a strong league, relatively speaking. And then after that in East Africa with Tanzania, Kenya, Uganda together. So I think with that infrastructure, particularly in Uganda and Tanzania, they actually have quite strong local leagues. So I think it'd be interesting to see how much of a difference that makes when they have, you know, the AFCON infrastructure in place, and can they capitalize on that with their local leagues?
It's a long-term challenge, right? We've spoken a lot there about the kind of sheer diversity of Africa and, you know, the difference between markets and the different cultures, the different fan base sizes and things like that. James, from your perspective, would you say that from an international perspective, outsiders looking in, there is a risk of kind of oversimplifying the continent and thinking, you know, for those who are looking to invest or be active in Africa or to find their place, they see an opportunity. But, you know, how do you navigate that kind of level of diversity? Do you need to boil it down to individual markets? Do you need to just narrow your focus? I mean, how do you go about doing that?
I think that's like a whole session in itself. But I think it's probably fair to say from me, and, you know, I've worked with a lot of brands and on a lot of deals, not just in sports, but across Africa. I think the biggest impediment, the biggest challenge, and the biggest reason for failure is usually like oversimplifying the market or not fully paying attention to the market. So, I mean, we talk about Africa, and to be honest, I really can't speak in an expert on North Africa at all. It's not a market that I know very well. I don't think you have to go into like specific markets and say like, we can only think about one at a time. It is possible to take a regional views, but it's really on a case by case basis, you know, but I think the important thing, it is really important to try and understand, you know, what's going on in that market. Mm. Something else that I always tell brands when they're coming over here is how important that grassroots is. Yeah. So there's an interesting parallel here with music. Now in Nigeria, obviously Afrobeats has grown very big into a global industry. And what the successful artists have done there, like Davido, Burna Boy, Rema recently, is they've built a really strong following in Nigeria. Like that's where they build their hype. And to be honest, none of those artists really make a lot of money in Nigeria. If you look at Davido or Burna Boy, and you can read all the stories, there is this constant question, you know, they come back and it's almost kind of like a charitable thing. They do these concerts. These are guys who are selling out the O2, and then they're coming back to Lagos and they're selling tickets for, you know, $5 each. They're not really making money there, but that is where they build their core following and where they build their core fans. And that core following is what pushed them to, you know, to global stardom, because the guys who tried to start in the UK have never reached that same stardom as the like the guys, the likes of, you know, Davido, Burna Boy, etc., who really built their core fan base in Nigeria. You know, Nigeria's 200 million people, very active on social media, like they're very loud and they have a big diaspora. So the parallel there with people looking to come into Africa is, I think it's very easy to kind of think top down and say, we want to do these fancy events, a lot of PR, but it's really important that you get that core fandom that I think football has, maybe other sports, they have pockets, but get that core fandom, not necessarily because that's going to be your most profitable market, but because that is going to build your brand, that's going to build the hype, that's going to make you relevant before you build maybe the global aspect.
Really interesting hearing you speak. And there's obviously clearly a lot for me to learn personally and a lot for the industry to learn and understand around the African continent. And there's so much we can go into. And it'd be remiss of me not to ask Sheriff about the women's game in particular. Obviously, there's, I think, the two most expensive female footballers on the planet right now are both African, am I right in saying? What are your plans for the women's game, both, you know, national team, club, as CAF? What's the strategy there for growing that?
Okay, there is a strategy in place since 2019 in CAF for developing the women's football in Africa. And actually, it's got supported by the higher management a lot and pushed a lot in the recent years. We can see, as you say, like the African players moving between the clubs with the highest numbers. There is a full strategy from the women's department. We have a dedicated women's department in CAF, only focus on development of women's football. And actually, this is a point that is very important, because when it comes to women based in Africa, it's very hard to play football. And the challenges are huge. It's not something simple. It's not like the boys. It's totally different. So it's about changing the mindset of people even to let the girls go and play the football and many things. So you start from early down. Like, it's not something like you just promote the competition itself. You need to promote the behavior of the families and the parents and everything. So you need to create like something like a whole society around the women's football. But actually now, what's the good point is the African women, again, we are relying on more locally than you go outside, because part of our promotion for the AFCON, it was like for the African girls living in US, and how we promote those girls to be like part of the men's AFCON and part of the competition of the men, AFCON that it's okay. The football is it's our game. It's all our game, and we want to promote it more, and we want to play it, and we want to make all the Africans feel like this is something that the Jim said. Like it, people in Africa, they are really, really, really involved in football. You cannot find like in any country there is not like either a club or the national team they are following like crazy. Even if you have like some countries like they are very famous in basketball or like rugby, like South Africa or something, but still the football it's the most popular sport in Africa. Our plans continues, like this strategy is continuing, like we're pushing the African football from digital point of view as well. From what I'm doing with the development department is like during the last Women World Cup in New Zealand, we provide the African teams with the statistics toolkit for all the opponents they are playing. We get like a deal with a statistic provider to get all the data from the all the teams that facing the African teams in the group stage and then later on. And we provide the teams with all the data. CAF did it from their side to support the African teams. Actually, we have like a success story here as well. We have Morocco and Nigeria qualified for the second phase for the next level for the competition. And it was like for the first time we have two teams qualified to the quarterfinal. So we are developing as well. We are working on this particular area. And this is like main focus for the CAF administration right now.
From a Nigerian point of view, something again I don't think people might appreciate actually is how big some of their female stars are. Now I don't think I've ever been in a country where the difference between maybe their most popular male and female players is actually so small. I mean, you know, if you say like Asisat Oshoala, for example, or a number of other players in the Nigerian women's team, like they're household names in a way that I don't think the women's team or many other countries is. And I think they're held in a very high regard as well. I don't know how this translates across other countries, but I think it's quite an interesting thing. I mean, obviously in terms of funding, they've had a lot of issues with pay disputes, etc. But in terms of the actual like celebrity of the individual players, I think people will be surprised at how high profile some of these players are in relation to their male counterparts. And I think Africa is actually ahead of the game in that kind of like individual profile. And I think social media, Instagram, et cetera, has helped that because it's given a lot of these women like platforms, where they're on kind of level standing with the men. So yeah, I think that's something that people might not realize.
The last question I was going to ask was about what you're working on now. Obviously, you've got another edition of AFCON coming up in Morocco next year, but obviously the women's game, you've got the club tournament development, you've got AFCON to focus on. Obviously, a lot of work for CAF to do right now. Yeah. So a lot happening for you, I'm sure.
Yes, yes. We have many in our plate. Like we have the Africa Cup of Nations, men and women coming up, and we want to promote more. We want to challenge ourselves that this edition for Cote d'Ivoire, it's not like by luck. We want to prove that it deserved the hype we had.
Okay, guys. Well, let's wrap this up. Thank you very much to both of you for being here and for your time and insights. Really fascinating discussion. Good luck for your session shortly. Really looking forward to that one. And thank you both.
Thanks, mate.